Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. In the U.S., our students are falling behind in math and science. As a global economic competitor, we're falling behind too. But one area where we have made strides in reclaiming top status is as the fattest nation in the world. New research published in JAMA, Journal of the American Medical Association, this week finds that the number of Americans who are obese, this is unbelievable, outnumber the number of Americans who are overweight. Joining us on the line to take on this and other medical and health-related headlines is medical ethicist Art Kaplan. Art is head of the Division of Medical Ethics at NYU's Langone Medical Center. He's also the co-host of the great Everyday Ethics podcast. Hello there, Art.
Hey.
Hey, hello, Art. You know, I don't know why I thought this. Obviously, I was wrong that things were getting better with all this emphasis on how many calories are in things and how we shouldn't be drinking Coca-Colas and guzzling them every day. But this study that Jim just referenced says that 75% of men and 67% of women ages 25 and older are now overweight and obese, and that's a big shift even from 20 years ago. So I'm not right. We're getting much worse.
Well, sadly, yeah, and it's partly due to that childhood obesity problem now starting to seep up into the adult population. So that's been an issue. And I think what's been going on is we all congratulate ourselves that people are learning more and educating themselves and doing better in terms of avoiding the sugary drinks and all that stuff that you were talking about, Marjorie. And that actually constitutes, it turns out, about 0.5% of Americans. You know, in other words, the rest of us are just eating along and having a fine old time and aren't exactly reading, you know, the latest issue of Paranoia Blubber magazine or something. It's, I mean, we're not a country that's learning a lot from our own media. People's response, well, let's put it this way. There are more efforts to get them to eat larger portions out there in our restaurants than there are serious efforts to do anything about obesity in the schools.
Inside JAMA released this study at the Cheesecake Factory. I don't know if you're aware. You know, but, you know, you said something that I thought was the opposite. You said part of the what's contributing to this was the notion that, you know, the kids' obesity rate is increasing, which to me, as again, as I've said to you 42 times, as a former fat kid myself, almost breaks my heart because I know what the consequences are. I thought JAMA, the same organization, put out a study last year saying obesity rates for really young kids, 2 to 5 year olds, was down. Am I wrong about that?
It was, but it popped back up in the later age
really?
Bracket.
Really?
Yeah. So I don't know why we're all shocked about this. The Texas Ag Commissioner did bring back the Fat Friar,
right?
You know, and he's got soda back in the schools in the state, and no recess, and no exercise, and no movement. I don't know. It seems to me, from a steady pattern of advertising, of fast food and junk food, to not doing anything seriously in the school to modify behavior. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not totally shocked.
I know this is stating the obvious and then some. The consequences of this, both personally and as a country, at some point are going to be immense. I mean, both the financial cost, the physical cost, the psychological cost. What's going to stop this proverbial train? Anything?
I don't know. I'll tell you this. It's even in super subtle ways. I was in the hospital just doing some rounds the other day, and I noticed that all of the chairs in the waiting rooms are now supersized.
Oh, wow.
We can't sit in the normal size chairs, so they've had to bring in basically extra large chairs. And pretty soon, extra large chairs become the norm, and that's what people sort of expect, if you will. So, you know, as they play around, I guess it is, Marjorie, with the dress sizes, a 12 is not a 12, is not a 12 kind of thing.
Yep.
And the chairs get bigger, and the outdoor stuff at the beach gets reinforced. We all sort of accommodate to larger size, and I think that's where there's a huge danger. That's probably the biggest worry I have about doing anything about it.
Well, Art Kaplan, since you are a medical ethicist, is there something from an ethical perspective that organized medicine should be doing more of here? I mean, should they be crusading? I don't know. What? Anything?
I do think it needs the big crusade. I do. I think medicine ought to declare a crisis and say, look, it's great that we're mapping our genes, and it's wonderful that we've got a lot of new cures coming down the pipeline for cancer, which we do, But we got to make a dent in this just like we did smoking. And smoking took a kind of unified effort. Hollywood had to participate, making smoking not cool. We had to sort of prohibit where you could do it. And it took measures, you know, outside of medicine, but medicine had to get on board. So I think we need the equivalent of an anti-smoking campaign, because that did work pretty well.
So let's go from the horrible news to, I would say, pretty good news, depending on what the Supreme Court does in the next couple of days. While the obesity rate is exploding, the number of uninsured poor people in the country as a result, direct result of the Affordable Care Act, is dropping dramatically, correct?
Correct. Much, much better. Lowest rate of uninsured people, I don't know, since the 40s or something. I mean, just amazing.
And this coincides with the fact that for the first time, I think, CBS New York Times said in their poll yesterday that plurality,
more people support
the Affordable Care Act than don't, 47 to 44. You know, we ask you this and almost everybody this who has some tangential relationship.
But only I can answer it correctly.
To the Affordable Care Act. If the Supreme Court decides to essentially gut the law by declaring that subsidies to the exchanges, the federal exchanges, which cover, I think, roughly two-thirds of the states, can't be sustained. All of this progress, particularly with low-income people, almost all of whom are dependent upon subsidies, disappears, no?
Correct. you'd see millions back uninsured immediately, almost overnight. I'll say two things about that. One, if the Supreme Court did that, they'd really be dumb, because the whole case doesn't rest on anything that makes any sense whatsoever. It's a couple of words of interpretation, which I think just don't stack up. So I can't even believe this case is rolling along, but I'll leave that to the lawyers. Nonetheless, I can't believe they're going to overturn the exchanges. And if they do, the Republicans will never be so sorry, because you take 8-10 million people and throw them off the rolls, you are going to have a firestorm on your hands. And the Republicans have been begging at the national level to get rid of Obamacare for a long time. And I'm going to tell you, they'll never be sorrier than if they get what they've been arguing for.
Well, particularly because huge percentage of those uninsured people are in Republican states, meaning led by Republican governors who chose not to set up state exchanges. So they're using the federal exchange, the federal marketplace, as they call it. And they're the ones on whom there'll be the greatest pressure for people who didn't have health insurance, then had it, and then it's taken away.
And you also wonder about the optics, too, because so many of the people that have made these gains in health insurance are African Americans. And, you know, with this week between Charleston and the stuff about cops, this idea that here's another further bashing of African Americans,
I can't breathe a whole new meaning.
Exactly. And we're going to know, by the way, tomorrow or Friday or Monday
latest,
apparently, about what the Supreme Court is going to do about Obamacare. Well, let's move on, Art Kaplan, our medical ethicist, to some good and bad. Is this good or bad for you, Art Kaplan?
Oh, I like that. Let's call it that. Let's call this next part of the segment good or bad for you, courtesy of Art Kaplan.
That's right. Let's start with juicing. Is juicing, which lots of people do, lots of people go on these fasts and detox things. Other people just do this juicing to get these. You used to do this, Jim.
Remember, you had
that thing that looked like it was the color of
green.
Yeah, sludge.
It was like a kale, lettuce, and fruit kind of thing.
Good to do that to supplement. Good to do that to detox. What's your deal?
Bad.
Okay.
Stupid. Ridiculous. only people who were once fat as a little boy could be seduced into drinking cups of kale on a regular basis.
Thank you for that.
Because it doesn't make any sense relative to this notion of cleansing. You know, we're just learning a little bit about the bacterial friends we have in our intestines, and you don't want to actually kill them all. They're kind of there and helping us digest and get through life. And the notion of killing them off by cleansing out your intestinal tract, I think that made some sense in the 18th century, but it doesn't make any sense in modern medicine's understanding of how our innards work. So the cleansing idea, I think, is ridiculous. The juicing idea can be stupid, too, because if you're drinking a lot of sugary fruits, then that's not good for you either, plus you're not getting a balanced diet. So I don't mind if somebody really has a drink of more vegetable juice than sugary fruity juice, but this notion that you're going to go in a 30-day cleanse or you're going to just drink juices for a week, that's all bad.
Well, Art Kaplan, what about the idea that most of us apparently do
and
not...
And by the way, I say this, I have to tell you, Marjorie.
What?
Looking right out the window at a juiceteria.
You are?
In this one, right? Yeah, literally. I'm looking at it.
Is this at NYU's Langone Medical Center or someplace
else?
No,
it's just on the street. Okay. It seems to be fully overflowing with men with sort of walrus mustaches. But...
okay. But Art Kaplan, I mean, many of us don't get enough fruits and vegetables in our diet, particularly vegetables. I mean, a lot of people don't. So it seems to me, even though I know that from what I've read, it's better to eat the whole thing of kale.
Yeah,
than
exactly.
Eat
the peach, not the peach juice.
But if you're not going to do that because you're in a rush or whatever, isn't it somewhat helpful, vitamin-wise, nutrition-wise, to have, like what Jim used to have, the ground-up kale? What'd you put in it? Kale and what else?
You're insulting me. I'm not telling
you. Okay, whatever you do.
Okay, bananas, okay. A couple of fruits,
yeah.
A couple other
things. Well, it's better than stopping at a fast food place, no doubt about that.
All
but
right.
I still think it's better to just eat the whole Megillah, you know.
Okay.
Eat the real kale and eat the real peach and eat the real carrot, and I think you'll be better. Plus, you're really paying a lot of money to have somebody mush this stuff into juice.
With all due respect, Art, if I have a choice on juicing to decide between your point of view or Dr. Oz's, I know where I'll rest. Now, Art, number two in our category of good or bad for you, I was contemplating taking the whole newsroom out for drinks tonight to celebrate the fact that General Mills is phasing out artificial colors and flavors, so they will be eliminated from cereals like Lucky Charms, Trix, my favorite, Count Chocula, those sort of things. Is this not a good development, or is it not?
Good in a sense of tiny, minor good. Yeah, better to get rid of the flavorings and the additives and the unnatural colorings. It's still going to be hard to really justify to your doctor when you come in and say, had a couple of bowls this week of Count Chocula, but you know, no additives.
So what are they replacing? I mean, obviously, they're not going to be, they're all gray. They want them still to be with color. So what are they doing?
You know, I think, here I'm going to get in trouble, so don't, General Mills, please don't sue me, but I think there are naturally existing color agents for the primary colors. They don't have things in the world that are blue and green, but I think some of them are made of things like extract of beetle shell and stuff like that that's red. So don't sue me. I may be wrong, but I think that's, you know, it's natural. That doesn't mean it's necessarily something you'd want to wake up next to in your bed, but natural.
Well, that's what they say. They're using extracts from fruits and vegetables and spices. Yeah. Okay. I want to move on to my favorite story.
I know what you want to do. Yeah. This is also good or bad for you.
Exactly. We'll ask you whether this is good or bad for you. Apparently, some poor woman in Australia who was helping her friend to move had a catastrophe wearing her skinny jeans. We want to ask you about what happened to her and whether, based on that, we should all stop wearing, or if we are, wearing skinny jeans, Art Kaplan.
Well, Art Kaplan hasn't been into a pair of skinny jeans that he could fit into for a long time, let's put it that way.
It's very sad.
But so I must speak only from secondhand observation. I think skinny jeans, if they're cutting off your circulation and numbing your limbs, which is what happened to our poor Australian friend, she squatted a long time and lost circulation in her legs.
Yeah.
They're too tight. They're bad. I mean, I know women who are skinny and want to show that fact off or making a fashion statement, but boy, if you're getting numb or no blood is getting to your limbs, not good. Bad, bad, bad.
Yeah, she just basically fell down on the floor, unable to move. And it said in the story.
You know what this reminds me of, by the way? Corsets and things like that. You know, we're going to bind you into this thing and you won't be able to breathe, and we may have to remove a rib or two to make sure that you get the right look.
It said, it said her calves were so swollen, her pants had to be cut off. And the story claims that changing a car tire, even replacing a bicycle or anything you do, imagine that, your pants are cut off.
Our old friend high heels fits in here, too. They're not good for your feet.
Yeah, that's
I mean,
true.
You can wear them a little, but if you wear them all the time, I know they make you unstable and they get your ankle joint all out of whack. So it's a cousin to our skinny jean friends.
Yeah, okay. I guess the thing is, if you're going to wear your skinny jeans, don't squat. I mean,
don't squat. At least don't squat for a long time.
That's right. Do not squat.
And if you do notice, that you can't feel your legs. You may want to take off your skinny jeans.
God.
I haven't squatted in years, so I don't have to worry about it. We're talking to Art Kaplan, medical ethicist from NYU. Art, you know, all these online advances, we've talked to the governor about online education. And you know, on one hand, I like it because it provides greater access. On the other hand, my concern is it's going to ultimately create not a complement to in-class education, but sort of a second class for people who can't afford to be in the classroom kind of thing. Online doctor visits. I have the same ambivalence, but Congress is apparently really upset about it, not because they're worried about the quality of care, which is what concerns me, and I assume you, even though I don't know what your position is on it. They're concerned because seniors, people on Medicare, are much more likely to, quote, overuse the services if they can do it from the comfort of their home as opposed to traveling to the office. So I guess there are two questions. One, where are you on the congressional concern? And two, how do you feel about online doctor visits in general?
So on the latter, I don't mind online doctor visits as a supplement. I don't think it should replace going to the doctor, say, depending on how often you need to go, once a year, once every couple of years if you're younger and relatively healthy. But look, there are a lot of places in rural America where there aren't any doctors. There are never going to be any doctors. And better you should be able to get online and sort of talk with somebody in a more urban or more centralized place or wherever there's a group of doctors to get some initial idea of what's going on. I also think online has some advantages even for things like women's health. You know, I've said this before and I'll say it again. The future of something like abortion is a pill, not surgery. And being able to get your pill online, I think, is an interesting way around these attempts to restrict access to safe abortion. So telemedicine, online seeing the doctor, they have their place. All that said, I don't think the problem right now is overuse. I think the problem is underuse. We don't have very much of this yet. A little bit, you can see it in Alaska, you can see it in rural Minnesota, a little bit in places like Western Massachusetts, but generally speaking, or actually on Nantucket and Martha's Vineyard too, but we don't have enough. I'm not worried about overuse yet.
Well, can we get back to your first position? You're saying essentially what I'm saying about, you know, it's fine as a compliment. I'm not talking about the Medicare overuse issue. But and that's what everybody says in the education front, too. But isn't it a slippery slope? I mean, you ultimately get to a situation. What are those called? Concierge? What's that?
Mm-hmm. Concierge service.
There's some here where you have, you know, you essentially you only deal with high-end people who can afford, don't worry about insurance in all cases, that sort of thing. Why are you not worried, as I am, and maybe you'll cause me to stop worrying, why are you not worried that it starts as a complement and it ends up as a two-tiered system of medical care?
I am worried, but I'm also realistic, and I know that for some Americans, that's all they're going to get because they either live out in places where there aren't doctors or in situations where they're cut off because doctors won't see them because they don't take Medicaid. I want to give them something. I don't consider this really the best or ideal, but they got to get something. And so that's where I am. And I think to use it, we probably should be making regulations that say you can use this, but you have to see a doctor once every X amount of time. You know, you could put in a requirement that you can't just do this and get reimbursed unless you see the doctor in person, I don't know, once every 3 years or something like that, if you're a healthy person. So I don't like it, but I think it's going to start to emerge as the only option that some people have, and probably due to money, just the way we were talking, at least the first line option for others.
One last thing about this. As you're speaking, I'm thinking the one area where I guess I have less concern, where I think there can be huge value, and I have no idea if it's already being done, I'm assuming it is, shrinks, therapists. It seems to me having access to them on very short notice via Skype or whatever is a hugely positive thing. Is that happening?
Yep, and so is it for pediatrics where you can kind of make a reassuring thing to the mom who's worried about the fever or worried that the child is throwing up a lot. So there's some simple things I think you could do pretty well, yes. I don't mean to say mental health is simple.
I understand.
We're talking to Art Kaplan, our medical ethicist. Speaking of pediatrics, I read this story about the child diagnosed with measles on Martha's Vineyard, and I just got so angry because on the one hand, you know, I guess people are entitled. I don't even know if I believe this, but if you want to risk your own kid, I guess you can risk your own kid. But when you're harming other people, they have a list of where this child that had the measles came from another state to visit Martha's Vineyard, was all over the place, the public library, a canteen in Oak Bluffs, the family amusements in Oak Bluffs. And obviously, public officials, health officials are scared of infection. And measles is a pretty significant disease. I don't get why people can just go around infecting other people without any consequences.
Because we've misunderstood the whole vaccine thing. So measles is especially bad if you're a sickly kid.
Yeah.
Most of us can fight it off okay, but if you have immune diseases or you got a transplant, you're really in trouble if you get something like the measles.
And you get really sick. I remember it when I was a kid.
Yeah, that's true. You can. Yep, absolutely true. So one issue is, why are we letting anybody exempt their kid? And there are kids who, for health reasons, I think have to be exempted. But this religious or philosophical exception, I think we should do away with it. And California and Vermont, and Maine is talking about it, are both moving toward getting rid of the philosophical exception, which basically just means I don't want to. Religious, there aren't any religions really, any except a tiny handful of small ones, that have any objections to vaccination. You hear people talking about it, but Catholics don't, Muslims don't, Jews don't, you know, most Protestant groups don't. Maybe Christian Scientists might. There may be a couple of tiny, tiny sects that do, but really, I don't think there's any basis for the religious exemption. So part of it is too many people opt out. Second part, if you do opt out and you say you're not going to vaccinate your kid and they don't have a health issue, then I think you ought to be legally liable if you make somebody else sick.
That's a great point, because that would put a stop to it immediately if you had to pay the medical expenses of somebody else.
Exactly. And all these people running around tracing where this kid went, that's not cheap.
No. No, they have a whole list of all the places. Mm-hmm. Kids spent an awful lot of time in the library, considering they were in June and Martha's
Vineyard. But one last thing about this. Assuming that the vast majority of people are not anti-immunization, people should not experience fear because of an outbreak of this, because of this one kid on the vineyard. Should they or should they?
If your kid's not vaccinated, I'd pay attention. If you live in a community where there's a lot of non-vaccinators, which some folks do, and they might be getting together at the vineyard for some reason, a vacation or a party or who knows what, I'd worry. But generally, no. Vaccination rates still in the U.S. are 90%. For something like measles, mumps, rubella, and that's pretty good, and that's enough to give you herd immunity, meaning just simply it makes it hard for the virus to jump around a lot.
Got it.
So, Art Kaplan, what's on the podcast?
We are waiting with bated breath for our friends at the Supreme Court. I want to see what they're going to do. I think we'll be able to get this in. So, I don't know. I guess I'm ready to mount my impeachment hearing if they overturn the Affordable Care Act. I think it would be ridiculous.
Yeah, I've got my fingers crossed, Art. I'm with you that they're not going to do that. They're not going to do that. It would be just horrible. Art, thank you so
much.
Art,
it's great to talk to you as always.
My pleasure.
Art Kaplan is the head of the Division of Medical Ethics at NYU's Langone Medical Center. He's also the co-host of the Everyday Ethics podcast. He joins us every week.
Incidentally, we just heard that on numerous Twitter accounts that Jahar Tsarnaev will speak for the first time in the courtroom during the formal sentencing hearing. He apparently will read. Sharman Sacchetti from Channel 25 Fox is saying he will read a letter showing remorse. We'll bring whatever we can to you before 2. WGBH News will bring it to you throughout the afternoon. We shall return.